Support for the Think Podcast comes from SMU Continuing and Professional Education, offering courses in art, literature, film, history, and languages, as well as professional certificates and test preparation. You can register online now for the upcoming fall programs at smu.edu/CAPE.
We have arrived at a moment when victims of sexual harassment feel more empowered than ever to call out their abusers. But what do you do if you're living on tips and you know that standing up for yourself might mean you don't earn enough to pay the rent this month? From KERA in Dallas, this is Think. I'm Chris Boyd. Bryce Covert is a contributing op-ed writer at The New York Times and a contributor at The Nation. Her article in the March 5th issue of The Nation is called When Harassment is the Price of a Job. In it, she explores the real-world dilemma faced by many women who work front-of-house jobs in restaurants and bars. They're frequently harassed and objectified on the job, but pressured to act as if the customer is always right. It's a tough spot to be in, but as we'll learn, servers are finding innovative ways to make the industry safer. Bryce Covert joins us from the studios of NPR in New York City. Bryce, welcome back to Think.
Thank you so much for having me back.
You open this piece with the story of a woman who got a bartending job. She was warned by her manager not to drink a lot of water while she worked. Why was that?
The manager was basically trying to offer her a collegial warning because if the woman I talked to, Rebecca, had to go to the bathroom during her shift, she was likely to get groped on her way there because she had to wade through customers. And lo and behold, she found out that was exactly the case. She told me about being just repeatedly groped by customers while working there. They whispered lewd things into her ears constantly. One even tried to physically kiss her outside of working hours. It was just pervasive and rampant there. It sounds like basically the entire time she worked there, and it really took a toll on her mental and physical health.
A warning is something, but it really sounds like her manager was focused on the wrong thing. The problem was not that this woman had to go to the bathroom.
Right. And she talked about the fact that, you know, she was in this strange dilemma. If she reported what was happening to the owners of the bar, you know, their response was, oh, well, do you want me to say something to the customer? And she found that that had its own risks, because then perhaps the customer, who was likely to just come back, maybe he's going to ramp up his abuse because he knows it makes her comfortable. Maybe he's not going to abuse her anymore, but he's going to stop tipping her, and that's going to really hurt her income. So she had to really sort of balance her own physical comfort and safety with other potential outcomes of speaking up. It does not seem that the owners of that bar ever sort of considered just banning these customers who are harassing her from coming in. And unfortunately, that's a pretty common story I heard from women across the food industry. It's pretty uncommon that restaurant and bar owners make the decision to ban customers who harass their employees.
You hear this from women, especially those who start in these jobs at a young age. It's so normalized in this industry that they often don't realize that it's wrong for them to have to experience this.
Yeah, I mean, they definitely knew it made them uncomfortable, but some of them told me how years later they were able to put into words that they were sexually harassed. One woman named Anna actually said to me, you know, I didn't really call what happened to me sexual harassment until my harasser was later fired over sexually harassing someone else. And then she was like, oh, that's what I experienced. And oh my God, I can't believe something happened, that there were consequences for his actions. I thought that he was just the golden boy and he was completely untouchable. And, you know, to her credit, I suppose, a lot of these men who get away with this behavior in restaurants are often protected, particularly sort of the celebrity chefs or the higher level employees who restaurants may think that they can't do without are allowed to get away with a whole lot.
This is really interesting because, you know, we can imagine that the chef has power over everyone in a restaurant, but it can even happen to people with colleagues or even subordinates, because if they report bad behavior, maybe that person who is a line cook is in a position to mess up orders and cost that person tips anyway, in by way of retaliation.
Absolutely. I mean, basically, I heard from women that harassment can come from anyone, customers as well as coworkers. And that can be chefs who are sort of in management positions, but that can also be coworkers who you're trying to work alongside to get a difficult job done every night. And women told me, you know, these line cooks would harass me. And if I said no or told them to stop, they would purposefully mess up the orders they made for my customers. And that hurt me because I'm relying on those tips to make up my income and pay my rent. So, you know, these women are constantly trying to navigate this and just make sure that they can bring home enough money so that they can eat and they can stay in their housing and apartments.
And of course, there's the factor that these jobs see a lot of turnover. So if you threaten to quit over something like this, there's a really good chance that your manager will say, fine, there's three people waiting, you know, at the back door to take your job.
Absolutely. And a lot, there's also a lot of these jobs available. So some people feel like, you know, if you can't take the heat, get out of the kitchen. If you don't like this particular place, well, then you should just go find a job somewhere else, which doesn't, of course, get at the root cause, which is a potentially abusive and hostile work environment. Someone else may end up coming in and experiencing that same harassment. It's really pervasive in this industry that's just sort of the attitude among people who like it and people who don't, that harassment is part of this workplace. It just happens, and you just have to find a way to deal with it on your own.
A lot of women who've experienced this, and presumably some men experience this as well, but it's that the harassment is more about power than sex. And this is such an old story, but it bears repeating that harassment is not just about sexual attraction.
Yeah, I mean, women were really clear. You know, that woman, Rebecca, who worked in that bar, she said to me, you know, this was not about sex. These men were not actually trying to sleep with her. She felt that it was about showing their power and their dominance over her. She said, you know, even down to my ear canals, that they own them in some way by whispering these things into my ears. And that's true of sexual harassment in the workplace, in any workplace that you're in. It's not about sex. It's about power differentials and wielding it over other people that you work with.
It's such a weird, you know, attitude that we have about money, right? That if someone might or might not receive $10 from you, that you have the right to treat them however you choose.
Yeah, and I think that plays out in ways that aren't sexual harassment. You know, people also talk to me just about the ways that customers and clients treat them. They bully them. You know, they treat them like they're at their beck and call. But it does also sort of engender this sexual harassment because it does seem like customers feel this right to do whatever they want with someone when they know that they'll be rewarding them with a tip, which, you know, is definitely not what they are paying for. But somehow it creates this pervasive atmosphere where they feel at liberty to do what they want.
And it comes up in your story. There are situations in which restaurant or bar managers will tell a customer to knock it off if they're behaving poorly. But it sounds like that behavior has to be really egregious before anything is done.
Yeah, I mean, and it depends on the owner. I talked to a couple owners who did actually take some action, and they talked about the amazing benefits of it. One owner of a brewery said, you know, I went in with a zero tolerance policy, and if someone makes my employees uncomfortable, basically no matter what it is, I'm going to tell them to leave. I want my employees to feel comfortable and to stay because I don't want the high turnover costs. I don't want litigation costs in case someone were to come back and sue me. They talked about the fact that there are these really concrete benefits to taking your employees seriously, acting on their concerns, and thereby lowering the turnover and creating a good environment. But a lot of people don't see that cost-benefit analysis. They think the customer is always right. We need their business. We can't say anything about it. Or, you know, this star employee is so important to our brand. We can't, you know, touch that in any way. And it really needs to be a rethink of the way the industry views its customers and its employees.
I was surprised to learn that this sort of thing is also a problem for women who work at fast food restaurants. I mean, tips are not usually an issue there. So why would they be vulnerable in those places?
Yeah, so fast food employees don't tend to work for tips. So that sort of dynamic is not present there usually. But fast food has a lot of the same problems that are going in restaurants. You're in close quarters. It's a high pressure environment. It tends to be staffed by young people, both in restaurants and, you know, full service restaurants and fast food restaurants. That means that not only do young people potentially not fully know their rights or know, you know, what's acceptable, what's not acceptable, but it also may be that teens or other young people are the ones that are actually in charge of dealing with this harassment and may not know what they're supposed to do. Fast food also tends to have vulnerable populations staffing its stores, immigrants, people who may not speak English as their first language. And that just makes them feel they may not know fully what their rights are, and they may not feel like they can take advantage of them because they feel so much more vulnerable. So there are actually quite a lot of overlaps there. And from what I heard from people who I talked to there, and also what the statistics show, is that that sexual harassment is very high in fast food as well.
Did women tell you that they were expected to use their sexuality in order to get tips?
Yes. A lot of women talked about having managers who would encourage them to dress more sexy. When they looked cute, they would be sort of rewarded with either, you know, the front of the house positions or better positions. They get promoted. They would just even tell them, like, you know, you should basically play this up. You should feel flattered if someone's trying to pat you on the butt or someone's making these comments, because that means that maybe they're going to tip you more. You know, you invite their overtures, maybe they'll leave you a better tip, which is not only sort of disturbing in and of itself, but that paints a picture of why these women may feel like there's nothing they can do if they are being harassed. If they're being told they should encourage it, well, then it's very unlikely that if they don't like it and are uncomfortable with it, that that same person's going to do anything about it.
So I want to acknowledge that I am generalizing here, but it seems that there's a disconnect sometimes in the way that women and men perceive these interactions, right? I think there are men who would say, well, I saw this woman, she was attractive, and I gave her a compliment. Did these people think that the men really didn't understand what they were doing, or did people who've been victimized feel like men knew exactly what they were doing?
Well, I suppose it runs the gamut a bit. And you said this before, and it's also worth repeating, that men are also victims of sexual harassment, but the majority of victims are women. But again, this is about power. So a lot of the women really felt that these men knew what they were doing. It would serve to belittle them. It served to demean them, again, assert power over them. This isn't really sort of miscommunication. Particularly, you know, there are women who talked about saying no over and over again to a colleague and then having that coworker drag them into a refrigerator in the back and try to assault them. I mean, that person knows what they're doing. If you're being told no and no, no, and then you have to use force to potentially get your way, you know, that's not a compliment that went wrong. Those are the kinds of things that are happening in restaurant kitchens and behind the bar.
Why is the repetitious nature of some restaurant jobs a risk factor?
So boredom, you know, repetition, also socializing after work, the free flow of alcohol, all of these things can kind of combine into an environment where people are perhaps acting on their worst impulses, are not feeling checked. And that can be sort of a personal lack of, I guess, dialing it down, and also just an environment that's allowed to flourish where people don't think that they're going to face repercussions if they cross a line. And then, in fact, they cross a line and they don't face repercussions. It all creates this environment where people have sort of a freewheeling, anything goes mentality, which is very much what these women said is happening inside the kitchen.
My guest is journalist Bryce Covert. Her article in the March 5th issue of The Nation is called When Harassment is the Price of a Job. If you'd like to join the conversation with a question or a story, you can call 1-800-933-5372. You can email think@kera.org or go to Twitter. We're @KERAThink.
Support for the Think Podcast comes from the SMU Doctor of Liberal Studies program, a customizable evening doctoral program where you can distinguish yourself personally and professionally. More at smu.edu/DLS.
This is Think. I'm Chris Boyd, speaking this hour with journalist Bryce Covert, a contributing op-ed writer at the New York Times. She has a piece in the March 5th issue of The Nation called When Harassment is the Price of a Job. It's about tipped workers and people in the food service industry and how they deal with sexual harassment at work. If you'd like to join the conversation, you can call 1-800-933-5372. Bryce, one problem here is that many restaurant workers in a lot of states are paid almost entirely with tips. The federal rate is $2.13 an hour, and as long as they earn up to the regular minimum wage in tips, employers don't have to pay them additional money. Why do reports of harassment fall when states require a higher minimum wage for tipped workers, something equivalent to the hourly rate for workers in other industries?
Well, the theory is basically that when you're working for tips, and when tips make up such an important amount of your income, not just that they're something nice to have on top of a steady wage, but you really need them to in order to get by, which is what happens when you're working for at such a low wage. Again, you're sort of pushed to invite sexual harassment, because the idea is that if you sort of play up your sexuality, if you give in to overtures that maybe make you uncomfortable from customers, that then they might be inclined to leave you a bigger tip. And also, on the other side of that, if you say something to a customer who is harassing you and say, please don't do that, or whatever it might be, that then they could potentially retaliate by giving you a lower tip, and that also hurts you. And that this dynamic that's going on with customers then bleeds into what's going on with your customers and your managers, because if you're, again, being, you know, playing up your sexuality or giving into these things or even just not saying anything back to them, then you're seen as more of a target for sexual harassment from the other people working around you. And that all of this sort of combines to create a really big problem for people who are relying on tips. Whereas there's 7 states that do not have a tipped minimum wage. Instead, everybody, whether you're working for tips or not, has to be paid the same base amount. And therefore, if you're tipped, it really is sort of just like a nice thing on top of what should hopefully be enough to get by on anyway, then you don't risk as much if you say something to a customer like, hey, you know, get your hands off me. And then you are seen as less of a target by your coworkers and your managers.
Okay, nobody deserves to be treated with disrespect based on their sex or their gender or how they're dressed. But I think there are probably a lot of situations in which one person working in this restaurant is actually okay with the harassment or willing to tolerate it for the money, and someone else isn't. What happens, you know, in situations where someone brings a problem to her manager and the manager says, well, Kelly and Linda don't have a problem with this, so the problem must be you?
I mean, this is going to be true in any workplace. People potentially have different boundaries, but if an employee is coming to you and they are saying, this behavior is uncomfortable and this behavior is sexual harassment, not only do you have sort of a moral obligation to take that seriously and do something about it, it's going to create a better work environment for that person if you address it. And that also, studies show, creates a better work environment for everyone if they feel like they're taken seriously and their concerns are taken seriously. But it's also worth remembering that it's illegal. It's illegal to allow sexual harassment to continue when an employee brings it to you. And that's not just when it's happening with coworkers. It's also when it's happening with customers. Employers are responsible for doing something about sexual harassment, even if it's a customer who's the perpetrator. I think that fact often gets lost in the restaurant industry.
We have an email here from Allie in Houston who writes, she's interested to know your opinion about whether there's room for institutions like Hooters and Tilted Kilt, et cetera. And I guess that means restaurants that are known for waitresses who don't wear a lot of clothes. If there's room for them in a conversation about respecting employees in the workplace.
I think that you should not be sexually harassed no matter what you're wearing. And so certainly I can imagine it's complicated in a place like Hooters, where the whole basis of the business is women's sexuality. But there can be, women who are dressed in, scant uniforms, or that can be your brand. But you still have to make it very clear, like, that does not mean that you can say disgusting, lewd things to them. And that definitely does not mean that you can touch them. I think it's a harder line to draw when that's your brand, but it's still one that you need to draw. Customers should not be permitted to be touching or verbally harassing employees, really, no matter what it is that they're wearing to work.
In cases where managers do ask guests who are behaving badly to stop, is there like a method that works? Is there actually a good way to go up to someone who is a paying customer at your restaurant and say, you really need to stop this?
Well, one thing that I heard a lot from advocates and experts in this field who are working on this question is that what really is useful is to come up with your policy beforehand and have it somewhere where everyone can see. You know, you think about some places that post signs that say no shirt, no shoes, no service, or, whatever rules people are expected to abide by. Because then once it's established, first of all, everyone understands that that's the ground rules. And then it's easy to point to it and say, excuse me, you're not abiding by the rules that we have here. And it's a lot clearer when you ask them to leave. They still may not like it, but the ground is already laid for you to say, excuse me, sir, please exit our premises. And that's the kind of intervention that advocates really want to see more. It's sexual harassment training that just sort of tells people what sexual harassment is and says, we have a zero tolerance policy and leaves it at that. Really doesn't get the job done. Research has shown it's not very effective. What is effective is giving people those tools and even those scripts so that they know what to say when they see it happening. And that's for managers who, like I said, could point to the wall and say, these are our policies. And it's also for coworkers who can intervene and say, hey, Susie, are you okay? Is everything okay here?
So it's one thing to report harassment if you work for a restaurant that's part of a large corporation, or if you work at a facility that's large enough that there are multiple managers on site. Of course, a lot of restaurants are small, and there may only be one manager that people interact with, and that manager may be the problem. So what do harassed people in the food service industry do when it's not obvious who they should tell?
This is a huge problem, particularly, like you said, in restaurants where they're very small. The manager who you're supposed to report to might be the one who's harassing you. Although I also heard that it's a problem in fast food, because even though these franchises are part of large corporations, McDonald's, Subway, those kinds of things, it may not be immediately clear who you go to, particularly because they are franchises. So they're each individual businesses under the larger umbrella. If you don't know who to report to, or you are simply unable to report because you're worried that the manager is the one harassing you or won't take you seriously, there is the Equal Employment Opportunity Commission. They have regional offices as well as their federal agency, and they field sexual harassment complaints from all industries. One thing that I thought was really interesting, I spoke to the commissioner of the EEOC, and what she told me is, they can't proactively police the restaurant industry, even though they know it's one of the worst actors in sexual harassment. But what they can do is they can act on anonymous complaints. So you don't necessarily have to give your name and start your own proceeding, underneath your own identity if you've been harassed. You can go to the EEOC, tell them what's happened to you, and if they believe that there's likely something going on there, they can then act on your behalf and bring a charge, and you don't necessarily need to be involved. And they wanted to get that word out because it can be really complicated to report this. It is really difficult and fraught to report sexual harassment, so that's one potential way to do it.
But the EEOC is not often a quick fix. There's a backlog.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, there's a backlog, and the EEOC is underfunded and understaffed. I mean, there's really no way around that. I looked at the stats that they give me, and they get thousands of complaints from the food industry on sexual harassment every year, and they move forward on maybe a couple hundred of them on litigation. And some of that might be that they looked into it and they felt that it didn't warrant their action, but such a small fraction to me demonstrates that they do not have the manpower or the resources to do all that they could be doing. Although, again, you know, the commissioner I spoke to was very clear, you know, if you're an employer, do not sort of rest easy thinking that they won't come after you. You know, she was saying, we're going to be very as proactive as we can be and do as much as we can do. And you should be afraid of the EEOC knocking on your door.
So lots of workplaces have dress codes. It does seem like maybe it rises to the level of harassment in some restaurants that, you know, better jobs are given to women who are deemed more physically attractive than others. Is that something that women are talking about and acknowledging?
Somewhat, yeah. I talked to, for example, one woman who's been working in the industry for decades, and she recalled how the uniforms when she started out were extremely skimpy and that she felt exposed by that, that it seemed like customers then took advantage of that, looked down her shirt, looked up her skirt, and that over the years things have gotten better. She felt that things got better when she got involved with a union and they started pushing on this issue and saying to management, you have to take this seriously. This is not okay. And now she's allowed to wear slacks and a shirt. You know, again, you know, this isn't all about sex. This isn't necessarily, you know, men being overcome by desire because you're wearing a short skirt. But it may be telegraphing the wrong message when you're being asked to wear these revealing things, when you're being asked to play up your sexuality, and when you're being rewarded for it, when the cute girls or the ones that are more conventionally attractive are the ones getting promoted. I mean, that's also its own negative environment.
Just to get this out there, because I'm sure there are people asking, why women who are unhappy don't simply quit these jobs? What kinds of stories did you hear from people who stayed at jobs where the situation was pretty tough to handle?
Well, to be clear, a lot of these women did quit and suffered the consequences for it. One of the women I spoke to quit her job in fast food and hasn't worked since. Mm-hmm. Another woman quit her job eventually and went into credit card debt for the first time in her life because it was hard to get jobs afterward. But certainly some women stayed. And, you know, those two stories help explain why they stay. You know, you can make a lot of money in restaurants and bars depending on where you work and what the tips are like. It can be very lucrative. They also described to me how much they love this work. A lot of them really love their jobs. It is fun. It is stimulating. You're learning about food. You're learning about wine. You're helping people have a great experience. You know, there's a lot of camaraderie involved. You know, the people who you work with, when if they're not abusing you, really have your back, and it feels like a team. And they didn't want to have to give all of that up because someone was harassing them. Unfortunately, they felt that they couldn't get their discomfort addressed, and so they just sort of had to deal with it rather than having someone take care of it for them so they continue working in a good environment.
You're listening to Think. I'm Chris Boyd. My guest this hour is journalist Bryce Covert. We're talking about her article for the March 5th issue of The Nation called When Harassment is the Price of a Job. You can join us at 1-800-933-5372 or email think@kera.org. Bryce, in establishments that don't have a clear policy to protect workers, what did you learn about how colleagues try to support and protect one another?
Well, some people sort of came up with informal networks. I talked to some women who are actually suing their employer, McCormick & Schmick's, and what they said was when they felt like they weren't being taken seriously, the women of the restaurant gave each other their cell phone numbers and always had their phones close. So if someone was coming up to you and you felt uncomfortable, you could text someone else on the team and hopefully they would come and intervene for you. It can be really simple sometimes, not all times, but sometimes, to disrupt these moments just by coming over and saying, hey, Anna, are you okay? What's going on here? Or even just, hey, Anna, can you reach me those tomatoes on the shelf? Just something that breaks the moment and gives them an out. And so women talked about, you know, doing that for each other. The hope would be that that kind of thinking and that kind of response becomes ordinary, and among female and male coworkers, that everyone feels a shared responsibility to protect each other and intervene on each other's behalf.
You know what sort of stuns me is that the dining companions of people carrying out this kind of harassment don't object to it.
It is kind of remarkable to me, although I do think it speaks again to the way that people feel entitled to this, entitled to just sort of treat servers however they want. You know, I have not harassed people and have not witnessed it, but if you're seeing a companion do it and you're not speaking up, you know, are you thinking that servers sort you can do whatever you want to them? Are there other ways? You know, like I said, it's not just harassment. The servers experience, they experience bullying, they experience rudeness. You know, people can be mean to servers, somehow thinking that giving them a tip makes them entitled to treat them all sorts of ways. So it could be that the companions around them are engaging in these other behaviors that are not sexual harassment.
All right, let's go to the phones now. Our number is 1-800-933-5372. We have Keith calling from Big Count. Hi, Keith.
Hi.
Hi, go right ahead, please.
I go to the casinos in Louisiana, especially the Golden Nugget, and these girls wear skimpy outfits. And I have seen other gamblers catch them on the rear and everything, and they get, nobody says anything to them about that. Is that illegal to do that?
What do you know about that, Bryce? Sounds like assault.
Yeah, that's assault. And the employer is legally responsible for doing something about that if they know about it. So these women who that's happening to probably do have to say something, which, again, you know, reporting can be really fraught. Employers can sometimes escape liability if they say that they didn't know what was going on. But yes, if the casino knows that their female coworkers are being touched in that way and they're not doing anything about it, that is illegal under Title VII of the Civil Rights Act. It's also illegal to physically assault someone. So those customers are also overstepping the law. Again, you know, it's a complicated position to be put in. If those women are working for tips, if they don't feel that they'll be believed, they may not be reporting it. And, you know, I certainly cannot judge them for that. It's a really fraught process to go through.
What about women who say, it's fine, I'll take it? I mean, do they make it worse for their colleagues?
I think that, you know, it's unfortunate if they feel that way. You know, I don't think anyone should have to put up with this kind of thing. I mean, there's also a difference between wanted flirting and wanted sexual attention and unwanted harassment. And I think most people really do actually know what that line is, and it's not as blurry as we sometimes think it is. Mm. And certainly in restaurant culture, you know, people date a lot, they flirt a lot. And if that's consensual, that's fine, but people know when it's not and they need to stop when it isn't.
Bryce Covert is my guest. She's a contributing op-ed writer at the New York Times, and she has a piece in The Nation in the March 5th issue called When Harassment is the Price of a Job. That's what we're talking about today. If you'd like to join the conversation, you can email think@kera.org. You can call 1-800-933-5372 or leave us a message on Twitter at @KERAThink.
Support for the Think Podcast comes from the SMU Master of Liberal Studies program, a customizable evening master's program for working professionals. You can apply now for the fall of 2017. More at smu.edu/MLS.
This is Think. I'm Chris Boyd, speaking this hour with journalist Bryce Covert about the piece she has appearing in the March 5th issue of The Nation called When Harassment is the Price of a Job. If you'd like to join us, call 1-800-933-5372. In some places, Bryce, workers are beginning to organize against sexual harassment in restaurants and bars in a formal way. Can you tell us about Medusa?
Yeah, I think Medusa is a really exciting new development. So it's an organization that was started just a couple months ago in New Orleans. It was started by a woman named Caroline Richter, who herself was a victim of sexual harassment. A customer assaulted her outside of work. And she loves the industry. She loves her work. She loves working in the New Orleans food scene. But she hates harassment. And she just said, you know, I was sick of feeling fed up. I was sick of feeling sick of this. and she decided to do something. So she convened a meeting, and she said to me, you know, I was worried it would just be three people who showed up, but 50 people showed up, with many more who said that they couldn't make it but were interested. And it was a mix of people in the restaurant industry. And she brought to them a list of best practices that she thought that they should urge restaurants to adopt. She thought they might be kind of controversial, and instead everybody just sort of agreed to them. So now they've moved on to figuring out, you know, what exactly is this organization going to be and how can it be effective? And basically what they've decided they want to do is be, first of all, a certifier of sorts. So they would go into restaurants and conduct trainings, bystander intervention trainings, which is the kind of training I've been talking about, where people are empowered to intervene when they see harassment. And then that business could be certified as sort of a Medusa workplace. But then they would also do wellness checks, where they would check in with employees to see how things are going. And if there were any problems, an employer would have to fix them. And if not, they would then be decertified. The other thing they want to do is serve as a place to report. Like we were talking about earlier, it's difficult to report harassment, particularly if your manager won't take it seriously or is even harassing you himself or herself. So instead, you could go to Medusa and they could work with you to get you the support you need in the way forward. So they are hoping to have something soon. They said, they told me, by Mardi Gras, which I believe is happening soon. And I think there are other efforts like this. You know, there are some organizations that have been doing bystander intervention training for a while. One is called Safe Bars, and it mostly operates in D.C., although it also trains people outside D.C. They do this kind of training for staff in bars. An organization called Futures Without Violence is developing training for restaurants and trying to break it down into small chunks so that you can do it on servers' breaks or at the family meeting before people's shifts start. I think people are trying to get creative but also aggressive in finding solutions that are going to not just address harassment, but maybe even try to start preventing it in the first place.
I don't think too many people use the phrase family meeting without having worked in a restaurant. Do you have experience with serving?
I've never been a server, but I did work as a hostess in a restaurant. And I've also worked behind the counter at sandwich shops and things like that. So, yeah, family meeting is basically the meeting where you go over the menu and anything else you need to know before the beginning of the dinner service or whatever shift you're working at a restaurant.
It's just a funny term given what we're talking about today.
Yes. Well, and I mean, this is part of it, too. You know, restaurants often engender a feeling of community and family. And I think that's really special to the people who work there. But then that can't then become overly familiar and people feel like they can overstep bounds.
All right, let's go back to the phones. Tyler is calling from Houston. Hey, Tyler.
Hi, thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
Curious, what responsibility does an employer have or actions can they take when an employee is coming to them with a sexual harassment or sexual assault claim against another employee, but it did not happen on the work premises or during work hours? How can the employer, you know, deal with that without becoming the arbiter?
That is complicated, and this can happen with customers, too, where, you know, like I said, Carolyn Richter was assaulted when she was not on the job. I'm not going to get into the legal area because I'm not a lawyer, but basically in terms of an employer's, you know, if an employer feels that they should do something, and they should, you can still address that. You can still say, you know, to the employee who's bringing it to you, if they say, a lot of times employees will come saying, here's what I would like to see happen. A lot of women talked about how they asked not to be on the same shifts as the people who had harassed them, or not to let those customers come back who had harassed them. And you can implement that. That's a pretty quick step to take to say, to show that you're taking it seriously, whether it happened on your premises or not, because you don't want it to happen in your place of business. Unfortunately, a lot of women said that they were told that they were overreacting or being too dramatic or just asking too much, which is just, a mentality that needs to change.
Are there any legal holdups to banning a customer?
No, I mean, it's your place of business. It's a private business. If you don't want to serve them, then you don't have to. I mean, I've seen this sign actually in a lot of restaurants. They say we reserve the right to refuse service. Mm. you can set the ground rules. I mean, it's not illegal to say, you know, you're not wearing a shirt, you can't come in, or you need to put on shoes. Certainly you should be able to say, you're touching or saying inappropriate things with my employees. I don't want you back in my business.
All right, let's speak now on the phone with John in Austin. Hey, John.
Hey, I'm guessing that this is a bigger problem in places that serve alcohol. So is that true? And if it is there like special training or special emphasis given in those kinds of environments?
That's a great question. And yes, basically what all the experts I talked to said is alcohol is a contributing factor here. It's not a cause. Certainly people can drink alcohol and not harass each other, but it does tend to lead to these environments where these things are more frequent, where perhaps it's seen as more permissible. People are not holding back, giving into their worst instincts. And restaurants and bars are definitely a workplace where alcohol is flowing. I mean, I experienced this when I worked in one, and people talked about how after work you all drink together. You sit at the bar of the restaurant you worked in and you have a drink. There is that social aspect to it, but it can sort of lead to these environments. And I do think that people who are trying to do harassment specifically tailored to bars and restaurants do take that into consideration. It's not to say, you know, no one should ever drink, because I think a lot of people in the restaurant industry would actually take umbrage of that. But it is to say, you know, we need to think about boundaries. We need to think about what's appropriate and inappropriate and recognize it, whether people are drunk or sober.
All right. Let's go next on the phone to Jackie calling from Houston. Hi, Jackie.
Hi, thank you for taking my call.
Sure.
Your topic today reminds me I am an employment attorney in Houston, been doing that for about 30 years, but your topic reminds me of a saying I used to explain sexual harassment to juries and groups, and that is, if a man hits a woman over the head with a fry pan, we don't call it cooking. You know, sexual harassment is about power, domination, and abuse. The reason for my call is there's another issue involved here, and I'm sure people recognize that so many of the workers in restaurants are young women, underage, right? They're minors. And I was very proud to be a member of a trial team led by Ben Hall and Adrian Villacorta here in Houston quite a while ago that obtained a $7+ million jury verdict against Chipotle for allowing one of their minor waitresses, just turned 16, I believe, to be pursued and seduced into a sexual relationship by a manager in that restaurant. And it appeared to be part of the culture throughout that store and other stores we had heard about from experts in the trial. So that's something we really need to address, and it's probably going to need to be taken up by Congress and state legislatures.
Well, thank you so much for your call, Jackie. Bryce, did you hear a lot about sort of younger people finding themselves in dangerous situations in restaurants?
Absolutely. A lot of the women I talked to actually said a lot of this happened when they were younger, and as they've gotten older, they feel more empowered to assert their rights, to say this is not something I'm going to tolerate. And I think they also just learn more about their rights. And this is definitely a factor in why sexual harassment is so rampant in this industry. The employees often are very young. They may not know what their rights are, or if they do, they may feel disempowered to assert them. And the problem with that, too, is not just in these workplaces where it is definitely a problem, but it's also that these people then go on to have jobs in other workplaces often. You know, a lot of people's first jobs are in restaurants. And if they're experiencing harassment and feeling like perhaps this is just the way the world works, or, you know, this is just something that you should accept and deal with and not something people will address for you, if you're witnessing or experiencing harassment in other workplaces later, you know, there's a fear that then you carry that attitude forward and you don't feel like you can report it somewhere else. So it's really a big problem that this is happening with so many young people.
You're listening to Think. I'm Chris Boyd. Let's go back to the phones now. Joni is calling us from Conroe. Hey, Joni.
Hi there. Thank you for taking my call.
Sure.
I wanted to first say, yes, it's been that way in the world for a long time now, but thanks to your guest and people like her, we're shining a light on it and stopping it. But I wanted to ask how she felt about the push by this administration to start having restaurateurs, owners, and managers be able to keep the tips from their waitstaff.
I'm glad you brought that up. And I didn't really have room to get into it in my piece, but I think that that is moving in the absolute wrong direction. So basically, the Trump administration has issued a proposed rule to allow restaurants to pool their employees' tips and then to basically take those tips and use them for a wide variety of things that are not just giving them back to the employees who earned those tips. But all that's going to do is make people more financially vulnerable. It's going to make them even more reliant on the scant tips that they can get. It gives the employer all that more power over them, and potentially even induces the employer to ask them to play up their sexuality even more. If the employer now is pocketing those tips, then the employer is going to want you to do whatever that you can to get bigger tips. I really think that it could be dangerous, not just for, you know, these workers' financial stability, but for these high rates of sexual harassment that we see there.
All right, let's speak now with Justine in Dallas. Hi, Justine.
Hi. So I had an issue at my previous job where it wasn't sexual harassment. It was more like verbal harassment between with the men, you know, being a little bit more tough on the women. And I was wondering if you had any thoughts on, you know, just the environment where a guy can be a guy, you know, talking a little rough, giving each other a hard time. But as soon as a girl kind of reciprocates, and in my case, the exact same thing said to another employee, it actually became a huge mess. And when I tried to explain it to them, they said, well, you know, when you say it, it's just a little abrasive.
Sadly, we're not laughing at your story, Justine, but it's an old one. What do you think about that, Bryce?
Yeah, that word abrasive comes up in so many workplaces when women are seen as being overly aggressive for the same things that men do. It's a really good point because sexual harassment is one form of abusive behavior, but in a lot of these workplaces, it's happening on a continuum of abusive and hostile behavior. Not all of it is sexual, but there's still bullying, people yelling at each other, people even being physical. You know, I didn't include it in the piece, but some of the people said they'd had things thrown at them. This is, again, often seen as part of kitchen culture. And I think that's very disturbing and should not be tolerated, both because it is bad in and of itself, and then also because when there's bullying and abusive behavior, sort of like when there's smoke, there's fire, it often is either a precursor or a symptom that someone's going to sexually harass someone as well. And it just is this sort of, a lot of people called it bro-y, the culture that develops. And I do think, you know, there's also just a lot of sexism, not necessarily sexual harassment, where women are being targeted and also perhaps, like this caller said, you know, not allowed to get away with the same exact kinds of behavior.
So it sounds like men have a role to play here as well, not only in not harassing women, but in maybe just creating an environment where that doesn't seem like the sort of thing that will be tolerated.
Absolutely. I mean, obviously, step number one is do not harass the women around you. I shouldn't laugh because, I mean, you know, there are really high rates of harassment. I think men in the food industry should think about the kinds of things they're doing and think about, you know, are the women on the other end enjoying it? Is it a flirty compliment or is it making them uncomfortable? You probably know the difference and should reevaluate if it's the latter. But also, if you're a man who may not be doing that or who is and who wants to change, you can also be proactive. Again, bystander intervention training is about saying we all have a role to play in protecting people from harassment. If you see it happening, there are just a lot of different ways that you can interrupt that moment. You can talk to the woman herself. You can talk to the harasser. But you should do something.
Bryce Covert's article in the March 5th issue of The Nation is called When Harassment is the Price of a Job. Bryce, thank you so much for making time for us.
Thank you so much.
Think is produced by Stephen Becker. Shelley Canavy is technical director. Samantha Guzman is associate producer. Jeff Whittington is executive producer. You can follow us on Twitter. Our handle is @KERAThink. Mine is @ChrisBoydThink. You can subscribe to the podcast anywhere you find podcasts. You'll find the podcast and also archives of the show at think.kera.org. Once again, I'm Chris Boyd. Thanks for listening. Have a great day.